Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, it's Jackie Cation, and you are listening to the Dork Forest. The website's jackiecation.com, dorkforest.com, thedorkforest.com if you like a determiner. Let's do the credits. Patrick Brady's going to fix this audio and video. Vilmos works on JackieCation.com. And Mike Rickberg sang the song with his wife, Sarah. He composed it, and he will sing his version of the Mexican hat dance at the end of this show. Thank you so much for listening to the Dork Forest. Here's a scoop. I'm doing stand-up online. A lot of Zoom shows will eventually go back on the road. Sign up for my email list. It's easy to get off. It's harder to get on than it is to get off. And no harm, no foul, if ever bored. JackieCation.com. Sign up for the email list. You'll find out about my weekly Zoom shows and stand up on the road eventually. You may donate to the show if you would like. I would like. Sure, I would. There's PayPal, Jackie@JackieCation.com, and there is a PayPal button on both DorkForest.com and JackieCation.com, and there's Venmo if you like Venmo, Jackie-Cation, oddly enough. If you have listened to all of the shows, go to dorkforest.bandcamp.com, I think. The Dork Forest has a Bandcamp page. You can listen to a lot of ones that are free from pre-2009 when I started pre-recording. And then there's live episodes that cost me a couple of bucks, so I charge you a couple of bucks. There's also some stand-up. There's a story album that's very exciting there. And other than that, I have a lot of merch in my garage. Feel free to order if you know anybody who doesn't have any CDs or the DVD. And you can follow me everywhere at Jackie Cation. Let's get into the show. Hi, Jackie Cation. Here we are. Guess who's back? It's Mike Drucker.
Hello.
Hello. You know, whenever I talk about, anybody, what I like to do when I'm talking usually to Andy Ashcraft is I like to say, this person, and then I go, he was the dork about the thing. Yeah. And for you, it's always VR. It's mm-hmm. You have all the VR sets in the whole wide world.
I do.
Here's the weird thing about your setup. Wait, Mike Drucker. I should probably tell people. Is it at Mike Drucker?
At Mike Drucker on Twitter. Yeah.
On Twitter and all the things, mm-hmm. which is hilarious and people should follow. And and it's got a lot of video game information, which we will be getting into. and then you... So you have a book about video games called Silent Hill 2.
Yep,
and you said
yep.
It's part of a series where people write about different video mm-hmm. games, and you're writing the one which will all be out by the time this comes out.
Yeah, yeah.
On Silent Hill 2. Mm-hmm. And then you are head writer and one of the executive producers of Full Frontal with Samantha Bee, if I
That's
remember
right.
correctly.
That is correct.
Now, in less exciting, I have to show you this... this filter that reminds me of what it looks like where you are. Because you are where you are, right? You're sitting in your home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very exciting. What do you think of this?
I like that. Is that what it... Yeah, I like that.
That's the kind of what it looks like, mid-century chair.
Yeah.
I see a mid-century chair behind you. And this is my favorite video filter on Zoom.
I that chair has that people love that chair, and it was like I was like, oh, this is a nice chair, and I bought it. That chair gets more compliments than anything else in my apartment, including myself.
Right. You're just like, wow, is that chair comfortable? It doesn't look comfortable.
It's not. It's wobbly. It's, no matter how much you tighten it at the bottom.
Right. It's just sort of just sitting in a weird. All right.
Right.
Anyway, so what we're gonna dork out today with Mike Drucker, you should know, is video games. But specifically mm-hmm. horror video games, which
right.
I don't know anything about because horror video games, much like horror movies and television, genuinely frightened me.
Yeah.
So don't want any part of it. And but I know people who do, and they listen mm-hmm. to this program. So I say, let's get into it. What is it like? the only one I know is Diablo.
Yeah, yeah. It's scary. I think that's the first word
yeah.
I use. It's scary. It's pretty scary.
Yeah.
I think that I actually I like horror movies, but I'm not a huge horror movie person. Like, I have friends who will watch everything on Shudder, will see everything that hits theaters. And I'm very pick and choosy with horror films. And I love horror video games, I think, because of the agency you have. Like, I find horror video games scarier than horror movies. However, the ability of me to control the character makes me less anxious.
Oh.
Does that mean like a jump scare? Oh, sorry.
Yep. That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Like, jump scares scare me more in horror video games, but like I'm the one who's choosing to go in there. So I don't have to be like, oh no.
Yeah. Because you're just right. Because you could actually do something about it. Mm-hmm. That is the problem with horror movies and horror books, where I'm just like, that's not the decision I would have made. What are you?
That's a bad call. Yeah.
That's seriously a bad call.
It's such a bad call. And it
feels like it's a bad call made fictionally to move the narrative forward. And I was just like, that seems like sloppy writing.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about something horror? I mean, and granted, when something horrible happens in a horror, in a scary movie where you've made all the right decisions, that which is what comes to mind is Silence of the Lambs, a movie saw by accident. But here's the thing. I would never have chosen such a thing. Anyway, so, but this is a movie where even if you had done all the right things, the murdered people met the murderers and were murdered. So those are even scarier than, hey, dummy, did you hear a chainsaw and you saw somebody with bloodshot eyes? What is that? What's happening?
It's fine.
No.
I don't know. I think that there's something fun, like captivating about horror games because it's such a real emotion it draws out of you in the moment.
Right.
You know, like with your listeners and you all play video games, like, you know, there's a lot of abstraction in games where you're thinking about what you're like, how you're playing as you're playing. But with horror games, there's often a removal of that sort of initial layer because you're so like invested in what's happening in the moment, or escaping, or keeping yourself alive.
Okay.
And to me, that almost like horror games create like a lot of immersion for me, you know, because you're so engaged with your fear, you're less like, you know, like paying attention to what's around you. You're less distracted. And that's doubly so in VR horror games, which are intense.
Oh, I bet. VR horror games.
Holy
smokes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a terrible idea. Okay.
Like, there's one VR horror game called Duck Season. And the way it starts is, it almost starts as like this 1980s nostalgia game where you're like playing sort of knockoff equivalents of old Nintendo games. And one of them is called Duck Season, which is their version of Duck Hunt. And the more you play it, the more it becomes weird and terrifying and like sort of meta. But there is a moment when you're playing, cause you're like playing a little kid who's like sitting in a living room, but you can like look around, and at certain points, like, you know, early in the game, like your mom might be cooking something in the kitchen, or like someone's walking by behind you. Very 1980s sitcom house look.
Right.
And later on, you hear a noise behind you and you're like, I know I'm supposed to turn around. I very much don't want to turn around, but I know I have to. And when you turn around, it's terrifying without spoiling it. But it almost combines like a theme park with a horror film.
Wow. So it's, and the name of this VR game is Duck Season?
Duck Season.
That sounds incredibly well done. And
it's
horrifying.
So
yeah.
So
yeah. Cause you're just playing Duck Hunt. You're sitting there in a game.
Yeah.
Like a nesting doll person playing Duck Hunt. And that's an okay game. You're just sitting there in a living room, and you could look around the living room and you can do whatever. It's too bad there's no smell-o-vision.
I know.
Cause then you could smell your mom's cooking or whatever.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, you're not smelling anything. Maybe blood. Maybe horrible, horrible blood.
Just coppery blood.
Yeah. Just sort of sulfur.
Yeah.
And then you turn around and it's the devil. Anyway, so, wow. So that was, who makes Duck Season?
I actually forgot the name of the company that makes
it.
It's a relatively small indie company.
Okay. And what is it on? Like, what goggles are you using for this particular situation?
It is on only right now PC VR. So like it doesn't work with things like the Oculus Quest. It might also be on PS4 VR, although I'm not certain about that. I played it on Steam.
Oh, okay.
It's not
just
expensive.
A Steam PC VR situation.
Yeah. I also think that they converted it to non-VR. Like you can play it just sort of like a regular game. But to me, it's really the VR experience is what makes it.
Oh, it sounds like the VR experience makes it.
Yeah.
Your virtual, how much you love VR has been established. See his published works. See a previous episode of The Dork Forest, Mike Drucker.
Yeah.
And, are there ones that are just 2D that are super fun?
Yeah.
Or horrifying?
Well, then there's also like, I would... sort of unofficially split a lot of horror games into two different types.
Okay.
And this is oversimplifying, but like one type is more like you're sort of run and gun or survive zombies, where it's really about surviving combat, finding ammo, hiding at the right time.
Okay.
So your Resident Evils, let me think, what else? Outcast.
Okay.
Or Outlast.
Resident Evil and Outlast or whatever are they like the only first person, but like the first person shooter that I played the most in quarantine and possibly enough to actually get okay at it.
Yeah.
And essentially like when I first started playing, I was playing, you know, over the headset and there were children going, "What are you doing?" And I was like, no, I don't know what I'm doing. And
yeah.
So it was Apex Legend.
Yeah.
So that is just a first person shooter where you are picking up weapons and picking up ammo and picking up defenses and going around killing each other.
Yeah.
So something like Resident Evil, is that a first person shooter, but with a horror element?
They have first person shooters like that. That one is usually third person. So you're saying over the shoulder, but it's
okay.
Very much like that. And there are games that are online that do that with horror. Like there's this game called Dead by Daylight, which is an awesome game. And in it, four people play humans. Four people are humans and one person is a killer.
Okay.
And you're basically, the four humans are trying to work together to like start generators or find a car or escape. And the killer is trying to kill them. And what's great about it is one, the killer is far more powerful than the people. So it's easier to see where everyone is. It's easier to get the jump on people. It's easier to hang people on hooks, obviously. And the humans are very weak, but it's fun because like when you're a human, you're like, oh God, he found me. I got to like, it really does recreate that 80s slasher film feel. But when you're the monster, you're like, you really do. You're like, all right, I'm going to find you, man. I'm going to kill you. It's so great.
And it's arbitrary which one who you play.
When you go into
Dead by Daylight, can you pick your character or
you can like choose different different humans have different powers. You can like choose characters and stuff.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Oh, fun. And then, but who is assigned the killer? Can you choose to be the killer?
You can choose to be the killer. You can randomize it.
Nice.
And they have different killers. Like they actually have guest killers for movies. So they have like. They have someone from Silent Hill too. They have the Pyramid Head monster, which I'm sure I'll talk about. They have I'm forgetting which ones are the movie ones and which ones are the games ones, but they have like a lot of famous ones. They play off types. Like they have like a circus twin. Like a recent one is this circus twin where your power is you can throw a twin who attacks them, like runs and attacks somebody. Like a circus Siamese twin.
Yeah,
like it's very horror tropes.
Right. Why wouldn't it be?
Right.
Good for them because that's the fun part too, is if you're into this genre, you want to see all that stuff. And you're like, well, they left money on the table here. They didn't introduce an evil twin or a circus twin or anything, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And it's fun because they keep updating it. So like, you know, you have to pay for these updates, but it's a couple years old, but like every couple months, they're like, here's the new killer and here's the new human survivors. And the human survivors also have their own, like killers might have powers like teleporting or super hearing. So you can like sense people farther. Mm-hmm. But the humans have things like they're able to maybe like trick the killer or they're able to hide better. Like, so everyone has their own little superpowers depending on who you are. But again, it's so much fun. It's so much fun hunting down people.
I would like Home Alone powers.
And, yeah.
I would like to be able to take the products in a Target and then turn them into something that would thwart the bad guys. Yeah. So let's back up though and talk about, are there older ones? Like, should we get into this slower? Talk to me.
Yeah.
Well,
there's definitely older ones going back to, the rise of computers in the 80s, a lot of, initial text adventures by virtue of the fact that there was no visuals could be very spooky. And there were a few that were like, disturbing, or had, even the Zork games had their own scary moments. You didn't know what you were doing.
And I'll tell you something. There were a couple of games. Sometimes, how frustrating, what's terrifying? Not actually knowing how to get away from Old Man Willow on the Lord of the Rings text adventure. I died every time standing next to Old Man Willow, and I don't approve at all. And then I played a bird's eye one, like a top down, run around. It was half text and half mediocre. It was Dungeons of Doom, something like that. Of Doom. Anyway, but you'd go through all these levels and you'd pick up different things and you could eat things and you could get sick and you could die. But then monsters, some of the monsters had their movement, like D&D movement, was much faster than yours. So you would see them on the top-down view of just essentially a box with a bunch of squares of the dungeon. And then they would be on the corner, and then all of a sudden they were right there, and you're like, and that was about as scary as I wanted. Now, there had to be scarier ones than that.
But there were a lot of games like that. Like, I forget the name of it, but one of like the first big horror games was basically a maze where a T-Rex is chasing you, and it's, like old computer, almost like HyperCardi, where it's like you move forward, the screen flashes, you're a little bit forward. It's not like seamlessly moving. But then what made it scary is you'd have little things where it's like, it's looking for you, or it's right behind you, or run.
And
so like it had these things where you're like, oh no. And that was like, it's, if you look at it now, and again, I forget the title of it and I apologize, but if you look at it, it's like the most simple graphics, but you can imagine being in the 80s being like, oh, this thing's chasing me. And this game is letting me know how I'm being chased.
Right. And with that flash sort of reload business, it flashes. And then all of a sudden you get a message going, oh, it's right behind you.
Yeah.
And you're like, while it was loading?
And so it's so funny though. But then over time games got a little more complex, obviously. I think the first one that's kind of like considered the first true modernish horror game is Alone in the Dark.
Okay.
Which was a game in the, I want to say early 90s, maybe late 80s, a PC game. And it's basically, it's a very slow, very ugly looking version of what you probably see in Resident Evil, where you're moving around rooms where there's sort of skewed camera angles to give you that horror movie impression.
Okay.
Where like things like walk by, like you see something cross by a window and you're like, what was that? And it was very Lovecraftian. That's another thing too, is far, far more than movies. Video games are very, they love Lovecraft.
Right.
Outside of the racism, which there's a lot.
Right. Which and they whitewash it, don't they? Or in this case, non-whitewash it.
They
diversify it.
Yeah.
And so good for them. Because the thing is the things that I've had Dork for us about Lovecraft, the things that people love about Lovecraft are almost never that he was a racist. or certainly no guests of the Dork Forest or the people.
Right, yeah.
But the things, and so the great thing about all of these people who have talents, but are also assholes in other ways, right? They eventually die.
Yeah.
And you can cherry pick the good things that you liked out of them. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Who doesn't want Woody Allen to die? No, that seems early. Anyway, but
I hope you leave that in. I hope you do not cut that.
Oh, I will not. I don't have the energy.
So like, and over time you got to like, again, things like Resident Evil, which were more shooty style things. But on the other side of it, the other like sort of flip side of horror games are something I would more like more story based,
okay,
or more of a focus on maybe survival than fighting. Like there's a series of games called Amnesia and they're relatively recent. They just released a new one. And in the game, you can't fight. You can run, you can solve a puzzle, but you don't have the ability to fight. So when something shows up, you just gotta book it. And there was even a Silent Hill game that was like that too, Silent Hill Shattered Memories. And what that's such a creative thing, because in a game, you're used to saying, how do I overcome this? Mm-hmm. Like, okay, I'm not strong enough yet. I'll go find the right ammunition or the right gun, or I'll level myself up. But I know that if there is a monster here, there's a way to overcome him, or maybe stealth around, but there's options.
Right.
And in games like this, it's like, no, this thing would kill you, so run. And to me, again, that's like super fun, because it's putting you in.
It seems like a new angle, because how would you win? Do you just get away?
Right. You just get away. You hide. You know, you hide literally in a cupboard, and you're like peeking, you know, or in an armoire?
Yeah. Well, whatever. I wasn't going to call you on the furniture. You're good. And cupboard is fine.
Has it been a furniture nerd, by the way?
No. Matter of fact, note to self.
That would be so cool.
Yeah, furniture nerd would be great. Todd Glass, the closest we've come. because he had, it was a great, I wanted to get him on again to talk about, because he loves table settings. Anyway, which was as close as I got to furniture.
That's
but
crazy.
I would say this is that, so if you win by getting out, because remember that top-down thing that I was just talking about, that top-down game, the Doom, what you had to do is you had to go up 45 levels, pick up all the scrolls and all the things you need. You were looking for something called the orb.
Right.
You would occasionally run into a wizard. And then if you made it to 45, you would have acquired the orb, not even realizing you acquired the orb. But as soon as you acquire the orb, you have to get out the front door. And the wizard wants his orb back. So he's just chasing you as you run, as you find the stairs and remember where the stairs were, and just run down and down and down and down. And once you get out, victory screen. And by the way, victory screen from 19... gotta be 89.
Yeah.
Would be just a really pixelated black and white castle that's really cool looking at the time. Anyway, but that was it. I got out the front door and then the victory screen pops up. Is that what happens with this the amnesia?
Yeah, I mean, there's more of like a story book ending. So like you're getting like a little more of like a story ending to it.
Yeah.
So throughout it. Oh, and the other thing that these games do, I'm not sure the origin of this element. It might have been Eternal Darkness, which was another horror game, is that certain games now do insanity. And not just like a health meter where you go insane, but like as you see things like Lovecraft, but then the game will do things like there have been games that will glitch on the screen, or Eternal Darkness was an old back in GameCube when you had memory cards and it would like flash and say memory card erased, or it would pretend to go to like what'll be like an input screen.
Yeah.
And so it's doing these things that's like, again, after a while, especially with older games, it's a bag of tricks that you see a couple times, so it's a little less scary.
Right.
But like the first time when you're like going insane and then the game goes straight to like an input screen, you're like, no, what happened? Like you sort of have this panic. And what I also kind of like about that is some games do it where what you're seeing is what your character would be seeing. So like, you know, maybe paintings are melting and you're like, oh, that is what me as the character sees. But it's also creative when it's like fucking with you as the gamer, because it's almost, it creates this meta narrative of like, oh, it's not haunted, but it has that haunted feeling of something unexpected that's happening to me for playing this.
Right. Something slipped into my laptop.
Exactly.
And just like, no, that blue screen, that would terrify anyone.
Yeah.
Human and alive. So, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so like, and games that I love, there's games that cross over these two. It's not just like run and hide or shoot everything. There's games in the middle. Like the game I wrote a book about, Silent Hill 2, is it sort of comes from that tradition of run and gunning, but it really is one of the first major survival horror games that was like, that's the running and gunning is the padding. What you're here for is the story.
Okay.
Yeah. And so with Silent Hill 2 and, the Silent Hill series as a whole, just so you get a general overview.
Yes, please.
It's a series about a town called Silent Hill. It's this middle of nowhere America town. And it's supposed to be like the sort of like, almost like a, like not like a rich resort, not like a Martha's Vineyard, but sort of like a, you know, like a Catskills resort where it's like, me and the family drive there during the summer. It's supposed to be a nice little town.
The Wisconsin Dells.
Anyway. Yeah, but yeah, exactly. Exactly. And in different games in the series, someone shows up and the town is abandoned. And the town goes through different transformations. Like there's an abandoned town that just looks like a normal town with no one there. And then it's sort of like, you'll hear an air raid siren and it turns into this almost like, I don't know if you've seen Jacob's Ladder, but like Jacob's Ladder-y type, like rusty hospital type look.
Okay.
So the town is kind of like the main character in its own way.
Okay.
But in most of the games in the series, the central plot revolves around a cult. There's a cult that's basically, there was a cult that's been in the town for hundreds of years. Like the cult, depending on how the story's been retconned here or there, it's like involved in witch trials, or they've been summoning a demon, or they were buried in the past, or it's a Kiwanis. Civil war.
Kiwanis, yeah.
And, but in two, the cool thing about two is it's not about the cult. It's about this guy who got a letter from his dead wife that says, meet me in Silent Hill, like meet me at our special place in Silent Hill.
Oh, does so, he know that she's dead? And he is he, okay. He's like, this is where ghosts can come and hang. Okay.
Right. And also this game is 20 years old, so I'm going to spoil it for anyone listening.
Oh, right, so right. So make a note.
Yeah.
It's a, and it's fine.
It's fine.
Like, what is the game? Is the gameplay start when you get there looking for your wife at Silent Hill?
The gameplay starts with actually you looking in a bathroom mirror as this guy, James, and you're looking in the mirror, and then you're just in this dirty bathroom that has like just like a gross rest stop bathroom that you walk out of, and then you start exploring the town. But it even like starts you off in this gross place where you're like, it's not that you're scared, but you're like, uncomfortable.
Right, right. You've already been placed in a place where you're like, what is happening?
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And so in the game, and like, it's sort of like Resident Evil where you find a gun or something, like you even have like a plank that you can hit monsters with or a pipe.
Mm-hmm.
But the meat of the game is, you know, you're walking around this town, going into different buildings, and you're trying to find out, and you're meeting people. Like you meet this woman, Maria, who looks just like your dead wife, but she claims she's not her, and she keeps making fun of you for thinking she's her, but like she seems weird. And there's this woman Angela who seems very confused, and she's looking for her mother, and you and like and I'm very excited, so that's why I'm like but like or Eddie, who's this like overweight, very sensitive, bullied kid character, and each of them has their own story. And one of the things that makes it interesting is for a game from 2001, you are the central character, but the other characters have their own things going on. So their stories aren't in service of your story. It's more like, oh, here's other people in this town going through shit at the same time as you. And sometimes you'll cross over with them, but their personal hell is not your personal hell.
Does it feel like they also got letters from dead people?
It sort of is. Like Angela, yeah. The woman who's looking for her mom, you find out that you find out that this guy, James, as you play the game, you find out that his wife was terminally ill and she died. And he keeps saying she died of an illness. And as you go on, you sort of get a sense that the relationship was like emotionally abusive both ways, like her saying he's useless. And what you find out later is that he smothered her to death with a pillow because he couldn't take that she was sick. And this was like almost like this weird revenge, not revenge, but sort of like he didn't remember it until he was reminded of it by the town that's punishing him.
Yes.
Yeah. And so you sort of find out late in the game that you're kind of the bad guy
own
way.
Yeah.
But Angela, you find out that she killed her father and brother who were molesting her, and she's looking for her mom to kill her mom who let it happen.
Ah.
And you find out.
Wow.
Yeah. And you find out this Eddie dude who's like the fat bullied kid. He like you find out he like killed a dog and like shot a bully and he's on the run. And
okay.
And so the town of Silent Hill is almost like a purgatory or hell type thing where it's like you go in but you don't leave, or you don't leave, like, you know.
Yeah.
And so each of these characters has their own story, their own trauma, their own reason for being there, and their own conflicts with James, the main character. And it's so interesting because the game gives you just enough to figure out what's going on with these characters. But again, they're not there to give you ammo. They're not there to be a sexual interest or a love, except for Maria, but she's a love interest, but you're creeped out by her.
Right.
It subverts all these game tropes. Like, it like it tricks you into thinking Maria's weak until she dies and comes back a bunch of times. It the game keeps playing you, and it's not like Eternal Darkness where it's giving you these fake outs with, you know, the GameCube pretending to die or whatever. It's more like it plays off what you expect from the genre in 2001.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
I have a mission. All right, there's undead zombie looking things. I'll kill them. Oh, there's a giant, you know, it looks like my nemesis is a giant man in an apron with a metal pyramid head.
Right.
But that's not really your nemesis. It's just someone who shows up and he seems to have his own things going on. It's a game that almost wants you to know that your trauma's not special.
Yes.
In a weird way.
I was just about to say is that you don't really matter as much as you think you do.
Right. You don't matter.
Living
as much
your
as you
life.
You
but everybody else is also, oh, that is such a super meta kind of awesome message.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good for them.
It's so great. It's such a great game. Oh, sorry. My Zoom window just closed. Okay. It's such a great game. And it tries so many things that it pulls off well. And the other reason I love it so much is for 2001, again, games were advanced by 2001.
Oh, yeah.
But they didn't always handle the darkest shit that well. Like, horror games were usually like Evil Corporation, Zombie, or, you know, being chased by, you know, a Jason Voorhees equivalent.
Right. Right. It feels, yeah, it just seems like a real basic... like this, the same three tropes. So things that were interesting, like if I remember correctly, I remember my nephew, this had to be in the middle 90s when he was playing Diablo. And it just, I think it was the music that creeped me out more than anything.
Oh, yeah.
He's just in a wagon going up some hill. And I was like, why am I creeped out by this? And he's like, well, it's a horror video game. And I said, and I'm done watching it. And you're 15. Deal with it.
You're fine. You'll handle it.
I know that M isn't made for you, and yet it is. And so,
and the music in the game, the Silent Hill games are amazing. I own them on vinyl.
Interesting. All right.
That's my third. Dork Forest is vinyl video game soundtrack.
Well played. I am going to digress like I do in every Dork Forest to refer something that isn't your dorkdom. I'm watching Bridgerton on Netflix.
Yeah.
And Ariana Grande, Thank You Next, is a full orchestra version of that is what they're waltzing to.
I love that.
I bought the covers. I bought the album.
It's so easy to get me with covers. It's so easy to be like, oh, it's like a fun cover. I'm like, yep, down.
Exactly. I love the original. And now Pomplamoose is doing something exciting. Do it. Mash it up. And so now we're in the early
2000s. Mm-hmm. 2001, mm-hmm. Which is a crazy year.
It's another big year in the world of history. But the most important, when did Silent Hill 2 come out?
It came out, I believe, October 2001, although I may be incorrect about that because I don't have it in front of me.
And that's the second one, right? Silent Hill 2?
That's the second one. The first one came out, I believe, in 1999. And it was successful. Essentially, the first Silent Hill was Konami, which is the company that made Silent Hill, looking at Capcom's Resident Evil and going, well, that makes money. Let's do that. And a lot of companies did. A lot of companies made games that no one remembers because... And there were even series like... There's a series called Clock Tower, which started on the Super Nintendo, which was like... You're in like sort of like a boarding school and there's a killer. Which was fun, but then they made sequels to it that were a lot more Resident Evil-y because they were like, oh, that's what's selling.
Okay.
So the Silent Hill game, the first one was a success, and the second one was actually slightly worse reviewed than the first one because it was less run and gun and it was more just like talking.
Spooky story stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
But to me, that actually is what makes it so superior is that it's also a short game. It's 8 hours. It's a small game. At the same time, Konami was releasing this game called Metal Gear Solid 2. Right. And, you know, the Metal Gear series are these epics. You know, it's like this giant story, this international intrigue, dozens of hours.
Yeah.
And Silent Hill was by the same company, different team, obviously, was this like small, almost linear experience that you don't need to be good at games to play. There's an easy mode for the fighting, an easy mode for the puzzles that lets you almost walk through it. Mm-hmm. And honestly, you kind of should, because the fights are window dressing.
Right. Right. What you want is the story. You want to be creeped out by all of these different characters.
You want to be creeped out.
And it can, and you can interact with those characters on the easy mode.
Exactly.
And still have some gameplay. So, exactly. All right.
And
yeah.
And one of the more fascinating things about it that some games have since done, and I'm sure some games before it did, is a lot of video games that have multiple endings, it's very clear what choice you should make or failed to make. Whether, right. you know, it's like, oh, I'm going to save this person or kill them. And you have like a little like, you know, a halo appear with +5 good points or evil, or you lost reputation. The game doesn't do that. Instead, it just records minor choices you make, and that determines the ending. So if, for example, this like Maria marries your dead wife, Maria is like the sexy woman who looks exactly like her. If you, in the game, like work very hard to keep Maria healthy and you pay attention to her and you talk to her a lot, the ending of the game will be much more like Maria heavy. And, but if you ignore Maria or you let her get injured, and or like you look at your wife's letter a lot in the inventory, something you don't need to do, but if you do that, the game takes note of it and it becomes more of an ending about like your wife forgiving you or, you know, absolving you of it. And there's also insane endings, but it's so cool that the game doesn't tell you that it's paying attention to what you're doing.
Yeah, that is crazy.
Yeah.
All games should do that.
They should.
Yeah.
And more games do it now, a lot more do it now. But at the time it was like, you know, oh, it's not like I failed the torture scene and therefore I got the bad ending. You're more like, I don't understand. Why did I drive my car into the lake?
Right.
Which right. is one of the endings. It's the you've been dead the whole time and you drowned yourself.
Oh my God. I have to say that, you remember Fallout?
Yeah, of course.
Whatever. Yeah, so one of those, it might've been Fallout 2. There's an early scene where you can stop and help this woman from being harassed or sexually assaulted.
Yeah.
And if you don't, because a different nephew, I have many nephews, he played it through where he didn't help her. And I was like, because I was watching you play it going,
yeah.
Why aren't you helping her? Why?
You should help her.
He was like, why aren't you? You got a gun. Why aren't you helping her? And he's like, I got places to go. And so, or whatever that, I mean, he was just being a dick, right? So, right. So he goes out into the world and he plays the whole game and he says, and then he played it again and he helped her and he's, and the way the storyline changes, like he got a better dog or something.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's like he got better equipment or something better happened to him because he made a better choice. It's almost like real life where if you do esteemable acts, you get self-esteem.
Yeah,
It's almost like that, except for that. That's what the game's trying to teach you.
Yeah, is,
help each other. Anyway, so I don't know. It was Fallout. It was a pretty crazy ass game, but
So it's almost like in a time. And sorry, going back to 2001, that's also when Grand Theft Auto 3 came out. And if you remember that was like. We were like, oh, we can spend 100 hours just walking around a giant city and do whatever we want. Mm-hmm. It was kind of, that moment was almost the birth of, we need to make these games giant, open world, and like fully interactive.
Yes. And he was working at PlayStation right then.
Yeah.
And he was working for 6 or 8 months. He was working on this game that was supposed to be, much like TVs, video games get canceled. Mm-hmm. Like a year and a half, 2 years in, they would just get canceled. And he remembered one that was, it was so supposed to be like an LA Confidential kind of one. Mm-hmm. And it was so beautiful. And he was like, it's going to be this open world Los Angeles where you can wander around it. And it's set in the 40s and 50s. And then they canceled it. And he was like, he was devastated. He's like, this is killing me. Anyway, but it was this open world that you could just wander around in for hundreds of hours
and
interact with humanity. There was a comedy club in Grand Theft Auto.
I remember that.
I tried to get booked. They booked Inman. This happens in real life to me. Anyway.
There was two comics in Grand Theft Auto 4. It was, I think, Ricky Gervais and Cat Williams? Maybe?
Maybe. Very possible. Very possible.
It was definitely two comics where you were like, I mean, I get why, but also I don't know.
Right, right. I don't know who's booking this. Who's literally booking this? Wants you, you begs the question.
Oh man, there was a few years. This is not horror. A few years ago, there was this like Steam game slash app that was supposed to be like essentially an open mic where, you know, you would have like an avatar that would like get a moment on stage and you'd have a timer and the audience would get to react. And I tried it once and it was the world's worst. Nobody's listening. It's worse than real open mics were. It's like no one, like everyone's shouting. It's almost like, you know, like when you went to open mics when you started and there was like, you know, two crazy people and 30 people who really want to do comedy.
Mm-hmm.
That game was more like two people really wanted to do comedy and there was 30 crazy people.
Wow. And it was because they could just, and now we have Zoom open mics that a lot of comics go to, which is actually one of the most supportive. It's so hard to get into a Zoom meeting that to do it, you really want to watch comedy.
Yeah.
Or you really want to perform comedy. One of those two things is definitely happening. Because you had to do the update. You had to get like a password. Shit had to happen. You had to register.
Lighting work for you. Yeah.
Right, right. You had to buy a ring light. I bought a ring light. Look at that. Huh? See them in my glasses?
See? There you go. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I have two different depression lamps.
Oh, right, right. Your lighting is very beautiful, Mike.
Thank you so much.
It's very handsome. Everyone should know, by the way, I am talking with Mike Drucker. He has a new book out about Silent Hill 2. Mm-hmm. And he is a major force in the Full Frontal with Samantha Bee TV show. All of those things. And just follow him on at Mike Drucker. And also on Instagram, which I think is Mike Drucker is Dead.
What That's correct. Yeah. Mike Drucker was taken, so it's Mike Drucker is Dead.
Oh, there you go. And now we're back to dead video games. We're at like 40 minutes, man.
Yeah.
So what I need to know is some sort of currently favorite. Are you mostly doing VR horror right now?
At the moment I've been doing VR horror, but it's not necessarily because I like the format's super superior. It's just there's been experiences recently. There was a Blair Witch Project game. On VR. It was also on Xbox, but in VR, it's again, you're in a forest, you're in a haunted forest. And look, I don't have a big space. I live in a New York apartment. Yeah. I have to like move a coffee table to even create the minimum 6x6 space.
Right.
So I don't have a lot of room to move around. It's not like I'm somebody who can like explore and walk around. But even then, even in the limitations of a relatively small apartment, there's moments when you do sort of feel immersed. Like you actually feel like, not like I'm in a forest is real, but you're like, I am actually afraid. And I actually like I'm afraid in this situation. I'm not afraid because I'm supposed to be afraid or I don't know. It's like, I am afraid because I'm in a forest right now.
Right, right. You're actually in. Yeah. I mean, that VR has come so far. In the last 4 or 5 years, I would assert that it must look super real, real than it ever. I know I would like to see the movie Frozen 2, quite honestly, in VR, because the way they did the water was so gorgeous. I remember watching it just on my HD TV. And I have an old, that's why it's called an HD TV, because it was like one of the first generation HD TVs. It's not, it's nothing exciting, but it was so beautiful to see the water scenes. They had clearly just figured out how to do water. That's what I've noticed with Pixar and with Disney is the new movie. You're like, oh, what are they working on? Oh, okay. Yeah.
Have you ever seen have you ever gone back and watched something like Toy Story 1? It looks so it looks like when you go to the movie theater in the 90s and they gave you like the little 3D animation of things. Like it's so like, I remember seeing Toy Story when I was a little kid and being like, this is the greatest, most beautiful thing I've ever seen now.
Mm-hmm.
You look back at it, it looks terrible.
It does not look good. The writing's still good. So it's still
the writing's great.
Yes. It's which I have to say, let's weed off again to say that Soul. Mm-hmm. Was a movie that I did not want to see because all I could think was, oh, Pixar's killing people again. And they killed the whole planet in WALL-E. Mm-hmm. That old woman had a miscarriage in Up.
Yep.
And I was like, I don't think I can. I'm not in it for the anime, Pixar.
Right.
I'm in it for the Disney. And but Soul was actually really, really funny.
It was
and
so good.
Super sweet, which is all I want out of my...
Yeah,
my animated. I'm not watching Titan. I'm not watching
Attack on Titan. Yeah,
that's it. Yeah. Even though I understand it's very well done. Okay, so let's bring you back.
Let's bring me back. I'm trying to think of other modern games that I'm playing at the moment. You know, there's Blair Witch. They just released a version of Five Nights at Freddy's for VR, for the Oculus Quest, which I've been playing.
What is that?
Five Nights at Freddy's is basically this dude made this indie game that was kind of a very simple game where you're a security guard in a Chuck E. Cheese analog. Mm-hmm. And what you find out is that the robots go rogue every time that, like, sort of the lights go out or something or other. And so you kind of have to manage the power of the security thing to both, you know, check cameras, but power goes down when you check a camera, to like open this, but power goes down. So you're trying to manage power without being killed by these jump scare things. You can get it on iPhone. It's very jump scare heavy. So it's not like, you know, it's not like, oh man, this really makes me look at the human spirit and wonder what we're capable of. It's much more like, oh God. Like Silent Hill 2 is very much like, I mean, we all carry different, you know, layers, and sometimes we hurt those we love most. And this one's like, oh God, it's a giant robot. But they just released that in VR, and it's so scary. It's so scary, again, because you're like, all you can see is what you're looking at. And when you turn around, that's where something is.
Right. That's where I'd keep it. I'd keep the terrifying thing just out of my peripheral. I don't know about you guys.
I think that's good.
I'm not saying that I'm that I could write video games. I'm just saying maybe I could. Maybe I could. That's just good call. I'm saying, well played. Okay.
There's also like now, it's pretty popular in the indie scene to create very short horror experiences. Okay. So it might not be like a 10-hour game. It might be like a 30-minute thing where you're, you know, literally there was one I played recently where it's like, you know, an hour or so or too long, and you're just going to work at this convenience store, but like you're walking through this creepy thing and everything feels like one step away from being right. And like, again, like it's like a short experience. It's almost more like a walk-through theme park ride that's well done.
Right.
You know, it's not like,
what's that called?
It might just be called convenience store.
Yeah.
A lot of them are like, so like one of them is like, basically you get different VHS tapes of something like a kind of, not a crime scene, but like a horrible supernatural thing in a crime scene way.
Right.
And you kind of just like piece it together over half an hour of what happened. And that's the end of it.
Wow.
So, and again, it lends itself to it because horror is something that you can be scared very quickly. You can be unsettled very quickly. Yes. Like there was this game called PT, it was supposed to be a demo for a new Silent Hill game. But between the demo coming out and the new Silent Hill game, the company had a falling out with the creator, and there is a big drama in the community.
Kerfluffle.
But this game, PT, is actually now considered one of the best horror games ever made, even though it's just a demo, because it's a very short experience. It's about 15, 30 minutes, and you're just walking through the same hallway every time. But again, it's one of those things where things change. Or, you know, if you open the door to the bathroom, there's like basically like a bloody fetus in the sink, but it's like living and crying. It's very creepy. You're like hearing like radios go off. It's hard to describe, but it's this tiny short experience. Again, it was a demo. It was never supposed to be a full game. But literally, one, the company sucks. So they've tried to, like, you can't download it again if you delete it. So there are people, including myself, like, I have a PS5. PT doesn't work on the PS5. It only works on the PS4. So I'm keeping my PS4 just to preserve this demo that the company wants to nuke.
Right. You'll show them.
I'll show them.
You'll show. It's sort of like when I learned that my iPhone could actually record things that were on the video. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, well, then I can just record whatever this, you know, rant that I can't download. You know how like some people are better at ripping YouTube videos. Yeah. I can rip a YouTube video, but you can just hit record on your phone, and then it records whatever's playing on your phone.
Yeah.
Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or whatever. And and I have kept some things that are dumb that will not, I mean, for posterity reasons that.
Yeah.
Will I? I mean, I don't know why I would keep. It's literally an underwear ad for the guy Chris Evans. And you're just like, I love Chris Evans, and he's very handsome, super pale. In this weird, I was like, why? Why am I keeping this? And is it going to be one of those things my husband finds on my deathbed going, what is, how many times did she watch this GIF?
Chris Evans, huh?
Over and over again?
Still on the phone, still on the holophone.
Okay.
45 years later, it's still on the phone.
Right. And she's kept it charged. Anyway, so PT sounds amazing. I wonder if there's just like a video of it on YouTube. That was what I was leading to. Because kind of just want to watch it and then be frightened and then not have to think and then possibly think about it late at night. Have you ever, I'm going to get back to whatever. And this, it doesn't have to be like what you're playing right now. It could be sort of like Silent Hill, obviously a favorite horror video game of yours, but are there other, and there's a lot of suggestions in all of this we've already talked about, but I would ask you if there were any others and stuff, but before that, I will ask if you have used any of your VR capabilities to do like escape rooms.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Because they have online, there was a Dork Forest about escape rooms, and I think that it would be perfect with a VR helmet.
It is. Yeah, they have one called, I think it might actually just be called The Room, but I forget.
Okay.
And it's an escape room. It's the same as if you went to the old physical escape rooms, like you pull open a drawer, you find things, you solve little puzzles. Yeah, right. they have those, and they're really great in VR.
Yeah, I bet. It seems like it would be the only way to really. I mean, I suppose there's different interfaces like where you can create a virtual art gallery.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And I don't know if they're using that technology to make those things, but you can go to an escape room just on your computer with that technology, but an immersive situation, I think, would be much more exciting. And then the only other question I had for you that came up in the last 45 minutes is, have you seen the movie Colossal?
No, I know what it's about, but I haven't seen it.
It is ostensibly a monster movie, but it is actually it should be a video game.
Oh yeah.
Because it is such a weird, she produced it too. I forget. Is it, who is it? Knightley? What's her name? Kira.
Oh, Kira Knightley.
Kira Knightley might be in it. And it's, and she produced it. And because I think that, Colossal movie. This real clock eater, Rangers. Aren't you glad you tuned in? Good for you. A guy named Nacho Vigalondo directed it, first of all, and that should just be Anne Hathaway. Yeah, not Keira Knightley at all. Not at all.
Yeah, I get Hathaway. Where you're coming from, though.
Sure. Same age. Obviously has the same people having them work out.
Yep.
Because they have the same sort of ab structure.
Yeah.
Good for them. I would like someone to force me to work out.
Right.
But it's not happening.
We can't all be Kumail.
Like, we can't. I swear to God, if they cast me in a Marvel movie, I might spend 2 years trying to get it together.
Yeah.
I would. And then I would be just as irritated as Kumail's wife was for those 2 years. And then, of course, while being supportive, because Emily said that she was super unsupportive and then supportive and then unsupportive again and then supportive again.
Yeah.
Because it was maddening.
Of course. I'm sure.
I'm sure it was insane. 6 hours a day and then eating just one piece of raw tuna or whatever the hell, like he's a dolphin. Catch it. Anyway, so Colossal is a 2016 science fiction black comedy film directed and written by Nacho Vigalondo. Oh. And it is a delight and should be a video game and would be an excellent kind of scary video game because it's got that discomfort level.
Yeah.
That I think that you seem to enjoy.
I do.
In a video game where you're like, it's just slightly off.
That's what I like. I like not like in some haughty way, but I don't love torture porn. You know, no. Like if there's
take a stand.
But I mean, like, you know, people like movies like Hostel or like movies where there's like gruesome death scenes or, you know, like torture scenes, like Human Centipede type things. And those things are, they're not scary to me. They're just unpleasant. Like, I'm not scared watching it. I'm just like, don't cut off his finger.
Just because you can make it look real doesn't mean that you should use that power.
Right.
It's sort of like that episode, even Bones. I would watch on the road. I would watch a lot of Bones and they could make all of the dead bodies look real. And I was like, you guys are killing me, because I'm here for the hologram. I'm not here for the real looking death.
Right.
And but I do. Yeah. So and I like it if it drives the story, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 So I definitely gravitate more towards like the Silent Hill-y type things. The one step, like one thing's wrong or there's something wrong with this town, or, you know, I mean, to me, like, you know, I don't. It's honestly, maybe the comparison is, to me, I don't necessarily love the back half of a horror movie when they're being chased by a guy with a chainsaw, but I love the front half when they're at a gas station and someone's like, y'all shouldn't be in this town. Like, that to me is perfect. I love that. To me, and that's how I always felt on the road, especially when I lived in Washington State, because you do shows like, you know, you've been on the road, like everyone thinks when you're on the road, you're doing like clubs all the time,
right?
And sometimes you're gonna do like a strip mall in a town that looks like there was a fire at a school and no one knows what happened. You know what I mean? Like, it looks like it's haunted. Like, you've done comedy for haunted audiences.
Yeah, just haunted. As I was literally, there's, if I'm staying at a Super 8 and there's a bullet hole in one of the windows, this has not been a thing that has not happened to me,
right? Yeah,
and
of course.
And which is always funny whenever anyone complains about Zoom stand-up. I'm like, this isn't even the worst gig I've ever done. I understand my options of getting laid after this.
Right.
Actually much better since I've married. But
because
I'm home.
Right. I'm not 30 minutes into a set at a Jewish retirement home.
Oh,
just watching them be mad at me.
Right. I was thinking, because I'm not going to go on the, I made a decision yesterday that I'm not going to go on the road until I'm vaccinated. And I would, and I don't like that decision. I have vaccine envy, as Aaron Jackson has put it. And, but I also would love for the audience to be vaccinated. Oh, and I was talking to a friend of mine and she goes, you know that, who that, what that means? That means that you're performing for the elderly, for teachers and for nurses right now. And I was like, no, you're right. So I guess I can wait to be vaccinated. Not that I don't want to perform for all of those groups, but it is very specific exactly who I'd be performing for.
Yeah, it's a very narrow group.
If that were the criteria.
Yeah.
but okay, so just some more faves.
Yeah. So there is Layers of Fear, which is great, where you play the child of a painter that went insane and you're walking through your house. That's both good. They have that on Switch. They have that in VR. They have that on basically everything. And that one's fun because you're piecing together the story. You're piecing together what happened to this man. Like reading these old papers, you're seeing, and you find out like how his relationship with his wife fell apart. Like, to me, again, like, I like, have you ever done Sleep No More in New York City?
No, wait, maybe. What is that?
Sleep No More this interactive theater experience, which sounds bad, but hear me out. the theater company or whoever runs it basically bought a warehouse and they converted it to four or five floors. And the top floor is sort of like a bar type music performance area. And the other floors are each styled differently. Like, they have different looks to them. And it's basically you're walking through a story that keeps looping. So it's expensive, but you can follow different actors around. You can just open drawers in a room and like read letters, put them back. But like literally actors will walk right by you and there'll be a scene and they'll keep going. There's security guards throughout. And apparently there have been news stories about how bad sexual harassment is there from patrons because they'll see an actor and then grab her ass, you know?
Right. Right. Cause people can be jackasses, but people I've heard about this. So that talk about an immersive VR experience.
Right. but that's like the experience I love when it's in a horror game. It's sort of, cause when you're at Sleep No More, it's, again, this sounds terrible, but it's all interpretive dance.
Yeah.
But again, everything's one step to the side. So you like, you see these people come in and they're fighting in sort of a dance way. And then they run and you're like, do I follow them or do I try to figure out why they were in this room?
Right. Well, it's so funny because you're like, because it does sometimes performance art by its, but when you say those words out loud, the worst performance art I've ever seen in my life was Banana Land. It was so crazy. Andy and I, it was an early date. It was down in Culver City. It was in the round. So it was, it was impossible to leave. I will say this, an older couple in front of us left anyway.
Oh my God.
You know what that is? Gutsy stuff. I want to grow up to be them. Cause what it was is it was two scientists and it was about cloning and people were wrapped in saran wrap and then they were nude and then they were completely hairless. And when I say completely, we got to see all of it, including their butts. And I didn't want to know. Anyway, at one point, the nude woman clone is hovering over what looks to be a birdbath basin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And two metal balls fall out of her into the it was so bad. I can't even talk to you about. That's so when so we terrifying. Left, Andy turned to me and he said, can I just say I didn't know? And the guy who brought us, one of his close friends, goes, just before anyone, the five of us left, it was five people. And the first thing this guy, Aaron Vanek, goes, I am so sorry. And then it was horrible. But so this immersion thing, though, that sounds more interesting because did you go more than once?
I've been more than once. Each time I sort of like, I like to more get lost in it. I like to more like explore the rooms. You know, I'll watch scenes as they come in, but I'm a little less compelled to like follow specific actors.
Okay.
But that's what I love in horror games. I love this almost quiet exploration of trying to figure out what's wrong, you know, or what happened here.
Yeah.
Or why is this good? Like, to me, that's far more interesting than like killing the largest character.
Right.
You know, at the end of the game.
Right. Those are different games, you know, those sort of like smash and grab and mm-hmm. bang, bang. That those can be super fun.
Yeah.
But this game is different. This is a different genre. And you played many different genres, right?
I did.
Okay. So this isn't the only thing. You're not creepily sitting there trying to get uncomfortable.
No.
You have Animal Crossing or some damn thing that you like. Oh, yeah.
Definitely do. Right now I'm playing Dragon Quest XI, which is like as opposite of those games as you can get. It's more like a cheerful anime for children.
Oh, so well, what platform is that on?
It's on all of them. Switch, Xbox, PlayStation, it's on all of them. It is such a lovely game.
Dragon Quest XI.
Yeah.
Mike Drucker, it has been an hour. You should probably know that we have been talking. And I waited off on you. Is there anything that it's much like soccer. Let's give you some of these minutes back.
Okay.
Is there anything that you didn't get to talk about that you want to tell us about?
No, I think I hit everything. But if you want my book, it's called Silent Hill 2. It comes out physically January 26th, I believe digital the 19th. Okay. Or it's already out. It's already out.
Yeah, and it'll be out by the time this drops. It'll be
already out.
That's awesome. Silent Hill 2.
Yeah. Silent Hill 2. It's by Boss Fight Books. You can buy it. You can buy it on various sites. However, I recommend buying it from Boss Fight Books themselves. You can Google it and go to their site just because it's an independent publisher and the money going to them would be great.
Yeah. January 26th.
Yeah.
And then it's at Mike Drucker on Twitter and at Mike Drucker is Dead on Instagram.
That's right.
And people should watch Full Frontal. Because it's super good.
Yeah.
I thoroughly enjoy it. And do you have any albums?
I don't. Every time I've planned an album, I have either gotten lazy or gotten a writing job that sort of kiboshed it.
That is all of our losses, just so everyone knows.
Oh,
and
thank you.
For you are a delight. Ladies and gentlemen, we've been listening and talking with Mike Drucker. We've also been listening and talking to me. As I wax, like I do. Thank you so much for doing the show.
Thank you for having me.
And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Thank you. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?